history of the release of the Collateral Murder video by WikiLeaks, which was leaked by our preeminent whistleblower Bradley Manning, who is going to trial in June and facing life in prison under the Espionage Act for leaking to the American public the Afghan war logs, the Iraq war logs, Guantanamo files, and the famous State Department cables. This panel discussion happened because Birgitta Jonsdottir traveled to the United States from Iceland. She's a member of the Icelandic Parliament and a former WikiLeaks contributor and co-producer of the famous Collateral Murder video. She is a member of this panel, as well as Alexa O'Brien and Kevin Gazdola, two independent journalists who have been covering the Manning hearings, and Peter Hart of FAIR, which is a media accountability initiative. The panel is moderated by Sam Cedar of Minority Report.
Will the defense, in the course of the court-martial, need to prove, to substantiate Bradley Manning's claims that he had given it at first to other media outlets? Because that seems to, would undercut, it seems, the theory that he was attempting to disseminate this information to a place that had sort of some other nefarious motivations. Will they have to establish that? Is there substantiation of Bradley Manning's attempts?
His statement, in terms of the legal standing of his statement, and this came up in the pretrial because, you know, the judge was reluctant to have it, like, it not being used against him in the merits, because it's the Providence inquiry where he's pleading and he's going to plead to a stipulation, you know, to facts of what he did. Essentially, no. Then the defense might introduce that, you know, in their case, whether it's their sentencing case, in terms of, like, you know, the severity of what he should get for those charges because he pled guilty to them. But the statement in and of itself was testimony, but it wasn't, I'm repeating myself, it can't be used against him accordingly in the merits.
Yeah, the you know, outside the courtroom, how we talk about WikiLeaks is important, and how other journalists talk about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks is important. At the beginning of this, as the Afghan war logs were released, Joe Klein from Time magazine said, if a single foreign national is rounded up and put in jail because of a leaked cable, this entire anarchic exercise in freedom stands as a human disaster. Assange is a criminal. He's the one who should be in jail. Bob Garfield from NPR's On the Media. All of this has made me wonder whether WikiLeaks is a legitimate whistleblower or just a looter. Has Julian Assange shed light here with the release of 253,000 cables, or has he just smashed a very big store window? That is the presentation of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange that I think elite media and elite politicians want to present, because if you take them out of that journalistic context and turn them into vandals, into looters, it makes it much easier to demonize the entire project. My favorite was Jamie Rubin, a former Clinton State Department diplomat, who said, we don't know why Julian Assange is doing this. His position is to promote world peace, and that's just what the State Department is set up to do, so we don't understand Assange's point.
Brigitte, do you want to...
Yeah, I just want to add to this, because one of the things that's been really surprising to me coming from outside the United States is the fact that the media here does not seem to be aware of how dangerous it is, what's happening, that the line is completely blurred. And so when are they going to be next? And it just seems to be, like, from what I've been hearing from Alexia and Kevin recently, that this line, it's crossing over the line, and yet the media is just sitting like sitting ducks. And for me, I just don't understand it. How can they be so ignorant? I mean, from at least when I started to volunteer for WikiLeaks, I didn't see any difference from them being and me being a part of an organization that was, it had exactly the same infrastructure as a media. And when we were producing the Collateral Murder video, we did it like any other video in production. You know, fact-finding, it was just like a documentary that was already there, but you had to find all the facts about it. And I think it is very important that, so we sort of know a lot of the facts about what's wrong, what we need to think about is how we're going to stop reacting and do something about it. I think that's very important. That is one of the reasons I came here, and I wanted to have a discussion about Bradley Manning, is that we need to think what can we do for him, even if I think it is very important that we discuss how it's being built up. I would really like for us also to talk about what can we do about it, and what can all these people that are here tonight and listening and so forth do about it. I think... I think one of the problems in the United States is that you build so much on fear, you know, and you're constantly reacting to this fear, and you're paralyzed, and you feel like there's nothing you can do. And if there is any person for me that proved that wrong, was Bradley Manning. Just look at the impact of what this guy has in Mexico. So, and I just want to draw focus on to that, so we're not too technical about the case, because personally I find it to be very boring. you know, not too technical. I'm sorry if I'm... I do this all the time. I'm a complete control freak.
I noticed. I'm just joking.
Yeah, it's fine. I admit to this fault. No, seriously, I really want us to leave this room feeling empowered to do stuff for WikiLeaks. The reason why, Bradley Manning, the reason why he went out of Quantico was because of direct action. You know, and if there are any people, you know, either online watching this or in this room that participate in facilitating the release of Bradley Manning out of Quantico, I just want to say I'm deeply thankful, because it was so difficult to be outside, completely outside, and witnessing how this young man was tortured for bringing us what should really remain in the public domain. I would like to explain a project that is one of the reasons I'm here, that I want us to do in June when the trial starts. So just later on. Sorry for...
I think this is an important point. I mean, because I'm curious that let's start with Alexa. The central issue, is Bradley Manning representative of something that is a larger problem in society, and when people are attempting to support Bradley Manning to secure his release or to secure some measure of reason from the government, To what effect? Is this an issue of whistleblowers? Is this an issue of information freedom? Is this an issue of media? Is it government overreach? What is it ultimately for you, Alexa?
I mean, one of the most important aspects of this trial is it is a joining together of all those issues. This is, the press is on trial at Fort Meade, and I say that in the press pool. When they ask, you know, why aren't there transcripts, or they're sleeping and snoring during sessions. The U.S. press is on trial, number one. The war on terror is on trial, because you have to look at the breakdown in the military intelligence corps that led to, you know, the breakdown within the SCIF. And then overclassification is another issue. This case is so important. You know, I wanted to speak to something Brigitte said. What's so inspiring about Bradley Manning, too, is it shows you the power of the individual actor. We keep hearing about asymmetric threats and threats and threats, but there's asymmetric opportunities, and Bradley Manning is one of those. And I feel personally that it's, you know, even in the act of doing transcripts, like I knew that this trial was going to be secret, and I decided I wanted to know what was going on, and just doing it, and it has an effect. And I think that's the hope of this, is how powerful this young man is. I want to say something about Bradley Manning, too, that never gets covered. This is not, this kid is actually very respectful of the military. You know, he pled to service discrediting and prejudice to good order and discipline. That's the lesser included offense of the espionage charge. He's only spoken highly of his current chain of command directly to him. He is not some kind of, he's incredibly respectful. So,
And Kevin, I mean, for you, the broader picture.
Well, the broader picture for me, and I said a little bit about this when I was talking to you the other day, for me, I just look at the incredible lawlessness in this country, the kind of impunity that our government officials have when they commit crimes. I'm not even going to limit it to war crimes. I'll say any major federal crime or any sort of crime that you and I are going to be deeply impacted, or others in the world are going to be impacted, and so much that their human rights are violated, or someone is going to experience great harm. And I would say that when I look at this case, I think about the choices that the Justice Department makes for whistleblowers, alleged leakers, activists, dissidents. And I think about what the military is doing with this soldier, to not only make an example out of him, but to also clamp down and reassert control, beginning to track every single soldier in the military's keystroke on their computer so that they can be very clear and well aware of what they are doing at their console or at their computer. And I just, in my mind, I wonder, as we think about this as a choice, because I think there is a choice here. The military does not have to go forward and have a trial of Bradley Manning. That is something we all have to realize here tonight. And whether we recognize it or not, his defense has given the military an out. And if there is any sliver of humanity in the Pentagon at all, this is an opportunity for them to say, well, it's enough. You're going to put him in jail no matter what. The judge made it clear that there's no scenario under military law where he can plead not guilty. So he's going to be found guilty of something, which means that he's going to go to jail for some time. We just do not know how long that is going to be. So that brings me back to this choice. The fact that the military would prosecute him, but yet people who are involved in Haditha massacring Iraqi civilians would not be given longer amounts of time in prison. You could have soldiers who pose with Nazi SSS flags, and you have people who are urinating on corpses, and they aren't given the sort of attention that Bradley Manning has been given for something that really didn't do any harm, really, in my opinion, isn't even on the level of obsceneness of what other soldiers have done in this war, of whether it would be raping women in war, committing acts of torture. And I mean, there's so much that I can go down the list here and talk about what the former Bush administration officials were able to get away with. I mean, we're sitting here a month after the 10th anniversary of engineering a war, of making certain that no matter what, during Bush's term, we went to war. I mean, just making sure. It didn't really matter what happened. If September 11th didn't happen, they were going to find some way that they were going to go and bomb the civilians in Iraq. And I think about all this. I think of this larger context. And to me, it's very difficult for me to look at the case of Bradley Manning and go, all right, I support that. I just can't.
Peter, and for you, I mean, what are the... one of the things that strikes me, and obviously you have your own sense of what the sort of the global significance of Bradley Manning's case is, but one of the things that just is stunning to me is that the way that the media has virtually blacked out this story. I mean, it is the idea that we have an American who is being charged of aiding the enemy and under the Espionage Act. We are sitting amongst what accounts for the two of maybe three or four individuals who accounts for 100%, 80 to 90% of everything we know about this case. It is astonishing. I mean, we're talking, as far as the government's concerned, Aldrich Ames, right? I mean, yet the coverage of this case has been incredibly missing. And I think to Brigida's point, without one of the reasons why I think it's important that we're here tonight is to build some momentum in the society to shame the media, which I think, you know, frankly, I think the work that Kevin and Alexa have done, frankly, has in many respects shamed the supposed more professional media, I guess. But give me your...
Oh, absolutely. You know, Bradley Manning taught us things about the world, things we needed to know, things that a lot of people didn't want us to know. Kevin and Alexa constitute most of what we know about the trial of Bradley Manning. Why they can do this and someone working in the Washington Bureau of the New York Times or the Washington Post can't do it, it's not a real question. They're choosing not to do this. There are stories that are too big and the implications are too profound and too grave. So when we puzzle over why there isn't a lot of coverage of Bradley Manning's trial or of the revelations of WikiLeaks, we shouldn't try too hard to think about this. If you listen to that audio smuggled out because it had to be of Bradley Manning explaining what he did, and you ask yourself, well, why wasn't that on the nightly news? Why wasn't that all over CNN? Well, you know why. Because if people heard that, it would put the lie to the idea that Bradley Manning was a petty vandal. He hung around with a bunch of hackers. He didn't have any political ideas. There was sort of armchair psychoanalysis about what his motivations were. He was uncomfortable inside the military. He was a loner, a misfit. We can't know the truth about what Bradley Manning's motivations were because it would be too profound and too grave and too damaging to U.S. interests. That, I think, is the media lesson writ large about what WikiLeaks and what Bradley Manning means. And the fact that two independent journalists go on their own dime to tell the rest of the world about what's going on at the trial of the country's foremost political prisoner because people from the establishment media won't do it. You know, you don't have to think too hard about this to realize why this is. They're doing extraordinary work. But like any independent journalist, they are pleading to the rest of the media, do it with us. Be there with me. Kevin doesn't want to own this story. Alexa doesn't want to be the only reporter producing this kind of work. No journalist wants to work like that. But the rest of the media is sitting on their hands. And there is no rational explanation for it other than the fact that the story is too big, too painful, and too powerful, and we must keep people's eyes and ears away from it.
I know why it wasn't on CNN, because the CNN reporter was right in front of me, and he was snoring during the session.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why it wasn't
oh,
on CNN.
Thank you for telling me it was.
Also, I want to give a shout-out to Adam Klassfeld and, mm-hmm. and Nathan Fuller, who have also been at mm-hmm. almost every hearing. Nathan has been there every hearing, and Adam has, too. They've also been covering this trial for the public.
Brigida's question as to why the press in this country does not see that they're next on the list, I think, is in some respect, the question is already almost answered because in some respects they were ahead on that list and they have already been sort of consumed. There's, in other words, it's not for a lack of awareness, although I guess the idea of someone sleeping at the pretrial, but it is in some respects, it is because the government has already been effective in chilling the reporting that this situation requires.
You know, one of the cables, my favorite example from WikiLeaks was a State Department cable that was about Iran procuring fearsome new weapons that could hit capitals in Europe. That was the cable. The New York Times reported that. They did not publish the cable because the government told them not to. So don't publish that on your website as part of the cables you're publishing. WikiLeaks did publish it. So anyone who read that New York Times story could go read the actual cable. And when you read the cable, you realized there were a lot of doubts about this intelligence. And there was a Russian official saying, we don't think any of this is actually true. None of that was in the New York Times account. And they wouldn't let you see the WikiLeaks cable to make up your own mind. You had to go to WikiLeaks to find it when you could. That, I think, is the threat on a different level to the media, is that WikiLeaks provides a different way of doing journalism. So myself and Gareth Porter and Glenn Greenwald could read this cable and say, the New York Times is totally blowing this story. And that offends them because they're the people who are professionals. We are supposed to entrust them to have secret sources that they grant anonymity to whisper in their ears all kinds of fearsome things. When the rest of us can see this information and make up our own minds, well, then it raises the question, well, what is the New York Times for then, if we can see this and judge it for ourselves? And that is a threat to the media on an entirely different level and might explain the lack of solidarity, if you will, with the plight of Manning or of WikiLeaks in general.
Brigitte, I mean, in that same vein, I mean, this is part of a larger struggle of democratizing this type of information, no? I mean, in the context of WikiLeaks.
I'll get to that very soon. I think what's really happening, and it's sort of good that the mainstream, it's sad that Bradley Manning is the victim of this, but the mainstream media is dying. You know, they're just like a dinosaur that's dying. And I mean, who wants to, it's just entertainment, it's not news, right? I think the most important thing is to doing just like you were describing, where you just, you know, you go and provide the information and the context online, because that's where people, you know, in very few years will get all their news. So maybe we shouldn't worry too much about the mainstream media not covering it, because it's just entertainment. And I just don't see very much entertainment value in this story. And it's because we're in this transformation. The media is metamorphosing into the internet, and they haven't figured out ways how to make money off it. So we actually have brilliant people like Alexia and Kevin and Nathan and many others that are covering stuff that nobody else does. And that's so much value. I think actually they probably don't realize how much, how many people are actually reading their stuff and building their own stories on it. So it might not sort of go directly into the mainstream media, but it's still of critical importance. And all the different coverage of the WikiLeaks cables and the other stuff I've been following it quite closely, what's been happening to it elsewhere in the world, and how important it is in other countries, and for nations, underrepresented nations, and lots of organizations that have been trying to saying stuff for decades, and everybody said, "Oh yeah, it's just conspiracy," and then you can actually read it in the cables. So it is of tremendous value, and even if that might not. We might not feel the impact of it. I think this story is so interesting about the media coverage of Bradley Manning and WikiLeaks and so forth. I've been approached, I don't know how many times, by CNN to do an interview, and then all of a sudden, after I've spent some time talking to them, they vanish. You know, I just never hear back from them. It's like I'm a leopard or something. And, you know, you just automatically get this impression that there are orders from above, and it's everybody knows, you know. We really know. But so if I, because I was asked for the plan, if I may, just really quickly, it's not in tune with this, but it is a way we might be able to draw attention to Bradley Manning. So I was thinking it would be a good idea to try to coordinate events with the focus on the video in every state as the trial starts. And we can do it in very many different ways. We can do guerrilla video projecting. We can take photos of stencil that says blowing the whistle on war crime is not a crime. We can show the video in local community spaces or local TV stations or, you know, local YouTube stations. Doesn't really exist, but... And then upload it, and then we can try to get global voices to do similar like they did with the Occupy protests, so you could see where stuff is happening, and I think it would be really great. Like, there are some people, I talked about this at another event last night, and there were some people that volunteered to do stuff. It'd be great to have the Occupy movement, Code Pink, and all these Veterans for Peace, and all these different organizations that have been sort of involved with the Bradley Manning case, to really draw attention to, like, to try to get as much sort of citizen-initiated ways to draw attention to his case, and it would be great if people would just play the film that was played earlier with his statement, or the statement in full, in as many places as possible, because it provides context to the video. And the video is probably, even if many of the leaks were very important, it is probably the most important one because it's so visual. It just really draws you in, and it just is nothing that can really compare to it when you see it like that. And you have the context of who the people are in it. And by the way, I just got a photo. No, the Facebook page of the guy that was gunning down the people in the helicopter today.
What you just heard was the second part of a two-part panel discussion that took place on April 5th at Judson Church about the Bradley Manning case with Brigida Jonsdottir, who's been a guest on this show, and she's also a member of the Icelandic Parliament and a former WikiLeaks contributor. Thank you for listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio. Special thanks to Michael G. Haskins and Reggie Johnson. Have a great weekend, and we will see you next week.
This Made It the 99% will be presente, and so will Building Bridges. We'll bring you the voices and issues of unionized workers and those struggling to organize, the unemployed and immigrant workers who have been the spirit and energy for May Day. We'll bring you May Day events here and from across the country, offering economic and political context on the condition of the working class in the midst of the crisis of capitalism. Building Bridges Presente, Wednesday, May 1st from 3 to 7 p.m., produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
This is Cornel West, and for the best in rhythm and blues, reggae, ska, calypso, and all the musical cultures in the rich African diaspora, I listen to the Midnight Ravers on alternate Fridays over listener-sponsored non-commercial radio WBAI 99.5 FM. The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special show.
Why doesn't it come?
Were you waiting for me, Dan Malley?
Who's that? Who spoke?
The Shadow.
The Shadow?
There isn't much time, Malley. They're coming after you to take you to the chair. Speak quickly. What have you to say?
Just this. For the best in old-time radio thrills, adventure, and comedy, tune in to the Golden Age of Radio, 7 to 9, Sunday nights, right here on WBAI New York.
Hi, I'm Rosie Perez, and this is WBAI, listener-supported non-commercial radio in New York.
is for the young, the old, the scared.